Chapter 6. Happening one evening to sit upon a bench in the forest in the glen, a few yards from the house door, we observed at our feet, in the ignominious circumstances of being upside down and greenly rotten, the old guard himself. That is to say, the painted effigy of a member of that distinguished corps, 7 feet high, and in the act of carrying arms, who had had the misfortune to be blown down in the previous winter. It will be perceived that M. Loyal is a staunch admirer of the great Napoleon. He is an old soldier himself, captain of the National Guard, with a handsome gold vase on his chimney piece presented to him by his company, and his respect for the memory of the illustrious general is enthusiastic. Medallions of him, portraits of him, busts of him, pictures of him, are thickly sprinkled all over the property. During the first month of our occupation, it was our affliction to be constantly knocking down Napoleon. If we touched a shelf in a dark corner, he toppled over with a crash, and every door we opened shook him to the soul. Yet M. Loyal is not a man of mere castles in the air, or, as he would say, in Spain. He has a specially practical, contriving, clever, skillful eye and hand. His houses are delightful. He unites French elegance and English comfort in a happy manner quite his own. He has an extraordinary genius for making tasteful little bedrooms in angles of his roofs, which an Englishman would as soon think of turning to any account as he would think of cultivating the desert. We have also reposed deliciously in an elegant chamber of M. Loyal's construction, with our head as nearly in the kitchen chimney pot as we can conceive it likely for the head of any gentleman, not by profession a sweep, to be. And, into whatsoever strange nook M. Loyal's genius penetrates, it, in that nook, infallibly constructs a cupboard and a row of pegs. In either of our houses, we could have put away the knapsacks, and hung up the hats of the whole regiment of guides. Aforetime, M. Loyal was a tradesman in the town. You can transact business with no present tradesman in the town, and give your carte chez M. Loyal, apostrophe, but a brighter face shines upon you directly. We doubt if there is, ever was, or ever will be, a man so universally pleasant in the minds of people as M. Loyal is in the minds of the citizens of our French watering place. They rub their hands and laugh when they speak of him. Ah, but he is such a good child, such a brave boy, such a generous spirit, that Monsieur Loyal. It is the honest truth. M. Loyal's nature is the nature of a gentleman. He cultivates his ground with his own hands, assisted by one little laborer, who falls into a fit now and then, and he digs and delves from morn to eve in prodigious perspirations, works always, apostrophe as he says, but, cover him with dust, mud, weeds, water, any stains you will, you never can cover the gentleman in M. Loyal. A portly, upright, broad-shouldered, brown-faced man, whose soldierly bearing gives him the appearance of being taller than he is, look into the bright eye of M. Loyal, standing before you in his working blouse and cap, not particularly well shaved, and, it may be, very earthy, and you shall discern in M. Loyal a gentleman whose true politeness is ingrained, and confirmation of whose word by his bond you would blush to think of. Not without reason is M. Loyal when he tells that story, in his own vivacious way, of his travelling to Fulham, near London, to buy all these hundreds and hundreds of trees you now see upon the property, then a bare, bleak hill, and of his sojourning in Fulham 3 months, and of his jovial evenings with the market gardeners, and of the crowning banquet before his departure, when the market gardeners rose as one man, clinked their glasses all together as the custom at Fulham is, and cried, "Vive Loyal!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, M. Loyal has an agreeable wife, but no family, and he loves to drill the children of his tenants, or run races with them, or do anything with them, or for them, that is good-natured. He is of a highly convivial temperament, and his hospitality is unbounded. Billet a soldier on him, and he is delighted. 25 and 30 soldiers had M. Loyal billeted on them this present summer, and they all got fat and red-faced in 2 days. It became a legend among the troops that whosoever got billeted on M. Loyal rolled in clover. And so it fell out that the fortunate man who drew the billet M. Loyal Devis Sir always leaped into the air, though in heavy marching order. M. Loyal cannot bear to admit anything that might seem by any implication to disparage the military profession. We hinted to him once that we were conscious of a remote doubt arising in our mind whether a sou a day for pocket money, tobacco, stockings, drink, washing, and social pleasures in general, left a very large margin for a soldier's enjoyment. "Pardon," said Monsieur Loyal, rather wincing. "It was not a fortune, but a Le Bon Dieu it was better than it used to be." "What," we asked him on another occasion, "were all those neighboring peasants, each living with his family in one room, and each having a soldier, perhaps two, billeted on him every other night, required to provide for those soldiers?" "Faith," apostrophe said M. Loyal, reluctantly, "a bed, monsieur, and fire to cook with, and a candle, and they share their supper with those soldiers. It is not possible that they could eat alone." "Apostrophe, and what allowance do they get for this?" "Apostrophe," said we. Monsieur Loyal drew himself up taller, took a step back, laid his hand upon his breast, and said, with majesty, as speaking for himself and all France, "Monsieur, it is a contribution to the state." "Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is never going to rain, according to M. Loyal. When it is impossible to deny that it is now raining in torrents, he says it will be fine, charming, magnificent tomorrow. It is never hot on the property, he contends. Likewise, it is never cold. The flowers, he says, come out, delighting to grow there. It is like paradise this morning. It is like the Garden of Eden. He is a little fanciful in his language." Smilingly observing of Madame Loyal, when she is absent at Vespers, that she is gone to her salvation au lait sun salad. He has a great enjoyment of tobacco, but nothing would induce him to continue smoking face to face with a lady. His short black pipe immediately goes into his breast pocket, scorches his blouse, and nearly sets him on fire. In the town council, and on occasions of ceremony, he appears in a full suit of black, with a waistcoat of magnificent breadth across the chest, and a shirt collar of fabulous proportions. Good M. Loyal. Under blouser waistcoat, he carries one of the gentlest hearts that beat in a nation teeming with gentle people. He has had losses, and has been at his best under them. Not only the loss of his way by night in the Fulham Times, when a bad subject of an Englishman, under pretense of seeing him home, took him into all the night public houses, drank arfenerf in every one at his expense, and finally fled, leaving him shipwrecked at Cleefeeway, which we apprehend to be Ratcliffe Highway, but heavier losses than that. Long ago a family of children and a mother were left in one of his houses without money, a whole year. M. Loyal, anything but as rich as we wish he had been, had not the heart to say you must go. Apostrophe, so they stayed on, and paying tenants who would have come in couldn't come in, and at last they managed to get helped home across the water, and M. Loyal kissed the whole group, and said, "Adieu, my poor infants." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and sat down in their deserted salon, and smoked his pipe of peace. "The rent, M. Loyal?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, A. "Well, the rent." Apostrophe, M. Loyal shakes his head. "Le Bon Dieu," apostrophe says M. Loyal presently, "will recompense me," apostrophe, and he laughs, and smokes his pipe of peace. May he smoke it on the property, and not be recompensed, these 50 years. There are public amusements in our French watering place, or it would not be French. They are very popular, and very cheap. The sea bathing, which may rank as the most favored daylight entertainment, inasmuch as the French visitors bathe all day long, and seldom appear to think of remaining less than an hour at a time, and the water is astoundingly cheap. Omnibuses convey you, if you please, from a convenient part of the town to the beach and back again. You have a clean and comfortable bathing machine, dress, linen, and all appliances. And the charge for the whole is half a franc, or 5 pence. On the pier, there is usually a guitar, which seems presumptuously enough to set its tinkling against the deep hoarseness of the sea, and there is always some boy or woman who sings, without any voice, little songs without any tune. The strain we have most frequently heard being an appeal to the sportsman, not to back that choicest of game, the swallow. For bathing purposes, we have also a subscription establishment with an esplanade, where people lounge about with telescopes, and seem to get a good deal of weariness for their money, and we have also an association of individual machine proprietors combined against this formidable rival. M. Ferris, our own particular friend in the bathing line, is one of these. How he ever came by his name we cannot imagine. He is as gentle and polite a man as M. Loyal Devasseur himself, immensely stout with Al, and of a beaming aspect. M. Ferris has saved so many people from drowning, and has been decorated with so many medals in consequence, that his stoutness seems a special dispensation of Providence to enable him to wear them. If his girth were the girth of an ordinary man, he could never hang them on all at once. It is only on very great occasions that M. Ferris displays his shining honors. At other times they lie by, with rolls of manuscript testifying to the causes of their presentation, in a huge glass case in the red sofa salon of his private residence on the beach, where M. Ferris also keeps his family pictures, his portraits of himself as he appears both in bathing life and in private life, his little boats, that rock by clockwork, and his other ornamental possessions. Then, we have a commodious and gay theater or ad, for it is burned down now, where the opera was always preceded by a vaudeville, in which, as usual, everybody, down to the little old man with the large hat, and the little cane and tassel, who always played either my uncle or my papa, suddenly broke out of the dialogue into the mildest vocal snatches, to the great perplexity of unaccustomed strangers from Great Britain, who never could make out when they were singing, and when they were talking, and indeed it was pretty much the same. But, the caterers in the way of entertainment to whom we are most beholden, are the Society of Well-Doing, who are active all the summer, and give the proceeds of their good works to the poor. Some of the most agreeable fates they contrive, are announced as dedicated to the children. Apostrophe and the taste with which they turn a small public enclosure into an elegant garden beautifully illuminated, and the thoroughgoing heartiness and energy with which they personally direct the childish pleasures, are supremely delightful. For 5 pence a head, we have on these occasions donkey races with English jockeys, apostrophe and other rustic sports, lotteries for toys, roundabouts, dancing on the grass to the music of an admirable band, fire balloons and fireworks. Further, almost every week all through the summer, never mind now on what day of the week, there is a fete in some adjoining village, called in that part of the country a ducis, where the people, really the people, dance on the green turf in the open air, round a little orchestra, that seems itself to dance, there is such an airy motion of flags and streamers all about it. And we do not suppose that between the torrid zone and the North Pole there are to be found male dancers with such astonishingly loose legs, furnished with so many joints in wrong places, utterly unknown to Professor Owen, as those who here disport themselves. Sometimes, the fate appertains to a particular trade. You will see among the cheerful young women at the joint ducis of the milliners and tailors, a wholesome knowledge of the art of making common and cheap things uncommon and pretty, by good sense and good taste, that is a practical lesson to any rank of society in a whole island we could mention. The oddest feature of these agreeable scenes, is the everlasting roundabout. We preserve an English word wherever we can, as we are writing the English language, on the wooden horses of which machine-grown-up people of all ages, are wound round and round with the utmost solemnity, while the proprietor's wife grinds an organ, capable of only one tune, in the center. As to the boarding houses of our French watering place, they are legion, and would require a distinct treatise. It is not without a sentiment of national pride that we believe them to contain more boars from the shores of Albion than all the clubs in London. As you walk timidly in their neighborhood, the very neckcloths and hats of your elderly compatriots cry to you from the stones of the streets, "We are boars, avoid us." ... We have never overheard at street corners such lunatic scraps of political and social discussion as among these dear countrymen of ours. They believe everything that is impossible, and nothing that is true. They carry rumors, and ask questions, and make corrections and improvements on one another, staggering to the human intellect. And they are forever rushing into the English library, propounding such incomprehensible paradoxes to the fair mistress of that establishment, that we beg to recommend her to Her Majesty's gracious consideration as a fit object for a pension. The English form a considerable part of the population of our French watering place, and are deservedly addressed and respected in many ways. Some of the surface addresses to them are odd enough, as when a laundress puts a placard outside her house announcing her possession of that curious British instrument, a mingle, ... or when a tavern keeper provides accommodation for the celebrated English game of Nakemden. ... But, to us, it is not the least pleasant feature of our French watering place, that a long and constant fusion of the two great nations there, has taught each to like the other, and to learn from the other, and to rise superior to the absurd prejudices that have lingered among the weak, and ignorant in both countries equally. Drumming and trumpeting of course go on forever in our French watering place. Flag flying is at a premium too. But, we cheerfully avow, that we consider a flag a very pretty object, and that we take such outward signs of innocent liveliness to our heart of hearts. The people, in the town and in the country, are a busy people who work hard. They are sober, temperate, good-humored, light-hearted, and generally remarkable for their engaging manners. Few just men, not immoderately bilious, could see them in their recreations without very much respecting the character that is so easily, so harmlessly, and so simply, pleased. Bill Sticking, if I had an enemy whom I hated, which heaven forbid, and if I knew of something which sat heavy on his conscience, I think I would introduce that something into a posting bill, and place a large impression in the hands of an active sticker. I can scarcely imagine a more terrible revenge. I should haunt him, by this means, night and day. I do not mean to say that I would publish his secret in red letters 2 feet high for all the town to read. I would darkly refer to it. It should be between him and me and the posting bill. Say, for example, that, at a certain period of his life, my enemy had surreptitiously possessed himself of a key. I would then embark my capital in the lock business, and conduct that business on the advertising principle. In all my placards and advertisements, I would throw up the line secret keys. Thus, if my enemy passed an uninhabited house, he would see his conscience glaring down on him from the parapets, and peeping up at him from the cellars. If he took a dead wall in his walk, it would be alive with reproaches. If he sought refuge in an omnibus, the panels thereof would become Belshazzar's palace to him. If he took boat, in a wild endeavor to escape, he would see the fatal words lurking under the arches of the bridges over the Thames. If he walked the streets with downcast eyes, he would recoil from the very stones of the pavement, made eloquent by lamp-black lithograph. If he drove a road, his way would be blocked up by enormous vans, each proclaiming the same words over and over again from its whole extent of surface. Until, having gradually grown thinner and paler, and having at last totally rejected food, he would miserably perish, and I should be revenged. This conclusion I should, No doubt, celebrate by laughing a horse laugh in three syllables, and folding my arms tight upon my chest agreeably to most of the examples of glutted animosity that I have had an opportunity of observing in connection with the drama which, by the by, as involving a good deal of noise, appears to me to be occasionally confounded with the drummer. The foregoing reflections presented themselves to my mind, the other day, as I contemplated, being newly come to London from the East Riding of Yorkshire, on a house-hunting expedition for next May, an old warehouse with rotting paste and rotting paper had brought down to the condition of an old cheese. It would have been impossible to say, on the most conscientious survey, how much of its front was brick and mortar, and how much decaying and decayed plaster. It was so thickly encrusted with fragments of bills, that no ship's keel after a long voyage could be half so foul. All traces of the broken windows were built out, the doors were built across, the water spout was built over. The building was shored up to prevent its tumbling into the street. And the very beams? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.